Are you driven, ambitious, and love all things marketing? Then this is your backstage pass to level up. I'm Emma, your marketing mentor and biggest cheerleader. With over 10 years experience, I'm spilling all my secrets to max out your marketing game. Expect authentic conversations as I dive into actionable strategies, behind-the-scenes stories, and hard-won lessons to give you the confidence and tools to boss your marketing career. Whether you're a recent graduate or a marketing director, this podcast is for you and the whole marketing community. You'll walk away feeling inspired and equipped to become the marketing lead you want to be. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notebook, and let's level up together. Hello, welcome back to part two of the fundamentals of digital marketing, the definitions, but also my take, my advice, and any stories that I have as well to give it a bit more gusto than just what you read in the textbook. So as I mentioned in last week's episode, we're going to do affiliate marketing, we're going to do email marketing, and then we're going to finish off with social media marketing. Now, I'm going to do social media marketing slightly differently. I'm not going to tell you all the definitions, but I'm going to do that one slightly different. I was trying to find a different digital marketing area to talk about, but I was like, do you know what? Social media marketing is one of like the main ones. And so I felt like I needed to put it in there, but pretty much everybody has a social media account. So I've done that one slightly different. So you will see when we get to that one. But as always, let's dive straight in. No messing around. Lots to get through today. So we're going to start with affiliate marketing. Now, affiliate marketing is not to be confused with influencer marketing. It is slightly different. And we're going to go through it now. So affiliate marketing is promoting other people's product in return for a small commission for each sale. So you've probably seen headings marked affiliate link or sponsored post on many websites you visited or even on social. And it is one of the most popular income streams for websites. So where does this happen? Microsites, email lists, video marketing are just a few methods that are used for this. Now, back in my day, oh my God, I literally sound 100 years old, but basically this classically started from blogging. So that was the traditional way that this was used. It was the most popular way for so long. And that would either include like writing an article and then including links embedded in the article, which people would click through to, it would come across organically. But then if you click the link and purchase the product, then you got commission off of that sale. Or people used to do it more obvious. So it would be like the top 10 best hairstyling tools with links. People click through the link and hey presto, they get their commission for the sale. In more recent times, TikTok has been probably eclipsing blogging for this. You'll see commission paid. So if you see that appear on TikTok, that's affiliate marketing. They will get a small percentage of the profit if you purchase through their link or their code. It's definitely easier to do than ever before. And it's the initial route, I would say, that a lot of people take before becoming an influencer. So it's a great way to dabble in being an influencer. It's also a great way for influencers to prove their worth and how good and loyal their audience are by doing this method first. In case any of you would like to be influencers, this is a good route in. Now, it is different. The main difference I would say between affiliate marketing and influencer marketing is affiliate marketing doesn't have the kind of contracts that come with being an influencer. So I guess it is a style of influencer marketing because they are influencing you to purchase the product, but it's not quite as formal when I'm talking about influencer marketing. So when I'm talking about influencer marketing, that is when a person has a contract with a brand to deliver a certain amount of things. So they might say, I have to deliver 3 TikToks, 2 Instagram posts, a story, and a reel. So that would be in the contract between the influencer and the brand, and that's what they've got to deliver on. But you see, it is very like a little, like it's a step up to go to the influencer. You've got that one-on-one contract with the brand. So to explain this a little bit more, so you can see how it is a bit more different to what I'm calling classic influencer marketing, there are 4 parties involved with affiliate marketing. So the first one is pretty obvious. That's the seller, the person that is selling either the product or the service. Now, these can be a person, it can be a company, it can be a massive brand like Amazon, or it can literally be somebody, one person selling handcrafted jewels. So it can be everything. Everybody can use this tactic, big and small. The second one is the affiliate marketer. So that is the person that is going to be promoting the product, and they tell the people why they should buy it. As I said, this can come from lots of different places, blogs, sites, emails, videos, social media, etc. This is where they'll say link in my bio or use my code or click this link to purchase. And that is because the code associated with them triggers their commission off it. If you do not use a influencer code or click through or something that they have told you to do, then the even if you purchased because of them, they don't get the sale for it. So from the affiliate's point of view, the person that is trying to make the sale, it is sometimes putting the trust in your audience that they are going to do that. I'm sure there is so many sales that happen that were because somebody saw an affiliate marketer, but then they didn't get the credit. So it is a little bit sometimes unfair, I guess, for affiliate marketers, because if they were the person to tell them and market that product, but then they don't get the commission off it. So you do need to use their code for them to get it. The third party involved is the consumer, so the person that purchases it. And then the fourth and final one, which is the most confusing, is the network. So let's dive a little bit deeper into the network. Essentially, the network connects the affiliate marketing and the seller. They're like the intermediary to make it all work, basically. So they do take a fee to run that service for you, as in if you are the seller, then they take a fee to run the service. And it's important to note that, because that can also add to your cost. So when you're looking at your margins, when you're looking at the kind of product profit that you want to make, you have to take into account the network's fee on top of the commission that you are going to be giving the affiliate. So this is where margins get quite tight. That is a lot of reasons why people sometimes don't use this tactic, because they don't have a big enough profit to be able to give away to make it worth everybody's while. Now, I'm sure that networks have got better in the last few years, but when I was doing this a couple of years ago now, it was still kind of clunky and time consuming, the networks that I used. But it is very good if you want to start with a service and you don't know where to start with affiliate marketing. They do kind of set it all up for you and do it for you. It is essentially a plug and play, and they take a lot off your shoulders. So it is definitely worth it, but there is a lot out there. And so that is a good place to do a lot of your research. Amazon use this tactic a lot. They call it Amazon Associates. And some of the reasons why you might use this channel if you are a brand or somebody wanting to sell something is you need more outbound sales support. Essentially, your affiliate marketing becomes your salespeople for you. Yes, they take commission, but you're not paying them a salary. You're not paying them anything from a marketing fee perspective except for the network. So it can actually be a really great and profitable channel once it's all set up. The second reason why you might use this channel is you have small advertising budgets and you can't spend a lot of money on maybe TV ads or podcast sponsorships or something that takes a lot of money. You might just have a small budget, and this has a low barrier to entry versus a lot of other marketing channels. And the third one is you might want to reach a new audience. So the best thing about affiliates is they have their own audiences. And if you are going to go into a new audience, this is a great way to test and see if your product resonates with your audience. This is a great lesson to be learned from Stanley Cup, who we know are flying at the moment. Did you know that Stanley Cups used to have a target audience for men? I think it was working men. And then they suddenly realized that actually, if they targeted women under 30, they would have a lot more success, says me, who's drinking out of a Stanley Cup right now. They wanted to try a new audience. I'm not sure the tactic that they used to try a new audience, but at some point they did test a new audience, and it's absolutely made them skyrocket. So if you are thinking about trying a new audience that don't know your product, you want to introduce them to your product, or if you just have low brand awareness, this is a great route in to get eyeballs onto your brand. So moving on to my verdict, because otherwise we're going to be here all day. I like this tactic for product-based businesses. It's been used at every role that I have been at where it's been product-based, and it is great for micro influencers. It's great to get an ROI, and it gives social another dimension. I like it because it doesn't take the investment like influencers, and it's a great way to get your new audience trying things. With influencers, sometimes the contracts can be really lengthy, like negotiation takes a while. You've got to really build that relationship, and a lot of time and effort goes into it. From affiliate marketing, it's in their interest to push and create the content. If they don't push the content, then they're not going to get anything from it because nobody knows that they have a link to do it. When I first started using this, it was really confusing with the codes and the commissions. And so what I would say from my experience is this needs a really good platform to make this work. You want it to be accurate for the affiliate's point of view and for your point of view and just seamless for everybody involved. As soon as it does not become seamless for the affiliate marketer, it might not even be worth their time. So if you're thinking about doing this, I recommend really putting the time into what platform to use. Now, this is definitely a great channel for experimentation, but my experience was actually the bigger influencers got less sales and the more niche ones got the better sales. They had a much smaller audience, but their audience was more loyal and more niche, more critically. And so there was more sales from the ones that we weren't expecting. So it's also a really good lesson if you want to go into influencer marketing in the fact as from a brand perspective, you want to start paying these influencers big bucks to increase your brand awareness, increase your sales. But actually, from a brand point of view, this is a great way to experiment with this to learn what kind of influencers actually get you the ROI before you take the plunge and give them probably not only commission, but also paying them for the actual influencing as well. So one thing to note here, though, that is different between this and influencing is I would err on the side of caution from a brand point of view, because this does allow anybody to promote your brand. But with some of the networks, every single affiliate network has different entry levels. And so some of the networks, you can literally go like yes or no to people. So there's definitely brand control. If that's a worry for you, it might not be a worry for you. Not only can this boost sales, which I've talked about, and I've also said it's a great awareness tool, do not forget that this is also a really good tool if you need to get that trust. Because essentially what affiliate marketing is really awesome word of mouth marketing. It's authentic content from people saying how awesome your product is and to go and buy it. So it goes without saying, the more authentic, the better. But it's a really great one to add into your marketing flow. And once it's all set up, it is relatively not a big lift for your internal team, which is really great. And we want more of the things that take less time. Okay, so just a couple more points on this. It's a great way to test new products to market as well. So if you've already got your audience, you're happy with your audience, but you might be testing completely new products, this is a great way to test, see how it resonates, see what people think. And my final piece to say on this is if you do this and you go with a network, do a trial. Do not get locked into a big contract with an affiliate network. Dip your toe in. It's a great platform to start with. Do a 3-month trial and see where you go. Do not lock in a big, big contract because it might not work for you. This is definitely one to try and test, see if it works. I think it's one that if you've not tried this before in your own product-based business, give this one some research. It's definitely worth your time to look into. I think that it was a really great addition. And yes, it takes a bit to get going. You want to make sure that you've got everything set up. But once you've done that, it really can be a really great platform to use, and you get sales whilst you sleep, which is awesome. And it also means that then your product, you don't necessarily have to go out to all of the affiliates to say, hey, can you be an affiliate for my product? You can do that, but if you're on these kinds of networks, then the affiliates look at your product and then they can, depending on the parameters, they can then start selling a product for you without you ever having to talk to the influencer, if that's what you want. That's what I'm saying, there's lots of different ways that you can set this up. Okay, let's move on because we've got two more to cover. So email marketing. Now, email marketing is one of the oldest forms of digital communication, but not only is it one of the oldest, it is one of the most effective digital marketing strategies out there still. In fact, it is ranked as one of the most effective marketing channels, beating out social media, SEO, and affiliate marketing. And according to HubSpot, 4 out of 5 marketers say they'd rather give up on social media than email marketing. I think I would too, but that's because social media is my nemesis. And it's typically used to generate sales by sharing promotional offers, nurturing leads, expanding the impact of content marketing efforts too. So there's a couple of reasons to do this. Obviously, you want to drive sales, you want to boost your brand awareness, generate and nurture leads, and keep customers engaged. And the final one is to increase your customer loyalty and lifetime value. Now, there is heaps and heaps of different tactics to use that fall under email marketing. So you have your content emails, These are your pretty standard ones that would go out regularly, maybe once a week, maybe a couple of times a week, maybe once a month, depending on how your business is set up. And these are interesting articles. It might be blogs, thought leadership, case studies, something that's happened within the business that you want to just help give people more places to reread something that you might have published on social media or your website. And this is content that is interesting to them, it's valuable to them, and it is serving them away from anything to do with driving sales. Your content emails do not want even a whiff of a sale. The next type of email is trigger emails. So that's what I call them. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but a trigger email is something that is triggered by something. That is why I call them that. So that could be if somebody has abandoned their basket, then an email could be pinged through to them to say, hey, do you still want this? Most product-based businesses have those set up. It could be a trigger email if you've signed up to something, and that could be triggering you and saying, hey, thank you for signing up. It could be triggered on your birthday. It could be triggered for lots and lots of other reasons. It could be that you might not have been on the site in a month or two. It could be that you have looked at a specific product, but you didn't put it into your basket. And it might be saying, hey, we saw you looking at this. Do you want 15% off? Lots of reasons for those. The fourth type of email is a sales email, which we all know and we all send far too often, because sometimes we're like, we need that up, we need that sale. And then the final one is information emails. So the information emails are things such as confirmation of purchase, confirmation of it being shipped, requesting a review after the product has been delivered. And the information emails, from a GDPR perspective in Europe, these are the only emails that you can send if they haven't signed up to hear from you. So please, please bear that in mind. So my verdict on email marketing is it was one of the first channels I learned about in my degrees. And it's also the first one that I really did on my first role and my second role. I think that if I was going to say anything, it would be find a really good email platform that can help you so much. Again, it's similar to affiliate marketing, the fact that it takes quite a lot to set up. You're automating emails, your trigger flows, all of that stuff, your templates, what you want your content email templates to look like. But whatever platform you choose, take the time to really learn how that works. Because once you've taken the time to learn how it really works and set up a lot of things, a lot of the hard work for this platform is done, and you only need to come and revisit it every so often. Every single place I've worked has had a different email marketing platform. Every single one. Seriously, nobody's had the same one. And every time I'm like, flipping heck. And every time I'm so tempted not to learn how to use the new one properly. And you know what happens if I don't do that? We don't use it to the full extent because we don't know what we can do with it. So really take the time to really understand how your email platform works. And every single one of them is, of course, different. Other things that I learned that really helped me with email marketing is learn how to segment your audience early on. Having your really, really clean, fresh audience data, your contact list, and knowing how that's set up, how that's split out, how you can split it out, and having them in really great segments can really, really boost the return on investment. Do not just bung everybody into one audience segment and send them everything. Some ways that you can split up your audience could be the types of products that they buy, how often they buy. You might have like one list that is your VIPs that buy all of the time. You might have it set up if you are a specific brand that has. So when I was in sports, we'd set up the segments by teams. We'd set up the segments by sometimes by gender if we were doing specific promos on a specific type of on women's clothes, for example. We would generally just know how to segment our audience. We would also segment it from people that were non-engagers, people that were non-openers. And so if somebody hadn't engaged with an email or opened an email in 6 months, we would send them a really strong promotional offer to get them, try and get them back up and to get them warm again and to get them back into our flow. But they would have to have dropped between a certain time and certain time that they hadn't purchased to get into that one. So that is why once you've set these up automatically, then people might fall into different segments. And then once they fall into those segments, then they get triggered an email that gives them maybe a percentage off offer. So you see how like tactics like that, that nobody really tells you about, but once you've done them, once you've got those segments set up, once you've got the trigger email set up, you could be again getting sales in when you haven't really even thought about how you set that segment up for months. So it's a really nice tactic that can work in the background for you once you've done a lot of the upfront work to segment your audience so that it triggers those kinds of things. And there's lots more tactics like that. That's just one area of that. One that I did really love, another one that I'm going to give you, is say somebody buys a product. Say that product is vitamins, okay? And people sell the vitamins. And then you know how many vitamins that are in the packet, and you know when it would have approximately shipped to them. And so say there was 30 vitamins in that pack. In 35 days' time, it would trigger an email to say, hey, are you running low? Do you want to reorder? That's a really good one if you want to get people on your subscription, but they haven't subscribed. That is kind of like a kick to get them to become a subscription member, but they might just need that like intermediacy before they get to that. The next couple of tips are learn how to personalize. Personalize, I mean, learn how to include their names in the subject titles. Learn how to write things within the copy. All of the email data flat platforms have different like short code to be able to do that. Test your subject lines, A/B test your subject lines to see what has a better open rate. Test your content and mix up your messaging as well. It's so hard for product-based businesses. I know we want to sell, but my recommendation would be 80% content, 20% selling. Also, remember that you showing up in their inbox, even if they didn't click on it, is another level of brand awareness. So it might even be doing things that you are not aware of. So don't be too hard on yourselves for your open rate and click-through rate. Yes, they're important data measurement points for email marketing, but just remember that they have allowed you into their inbox. And so that is a sense, even if they don't open it, you've got them again with a brand point. Remember, you do need them to opt in. And that is really important in Europe. They have to opt in. Okay, finally, sorry, I've nearly finished with this platform, I promise. Keep your data really organized. Go in and do a spring clean with your contact list. Once you have people that are really, really not engaged, you've tried to re-engage them and they haven't, it might be time to let them go. There's nothing wrong with that. I would rather have 1,000 people that are really, really engaged than 10,000 people that aren't opening it and they are never going to open it again. Do not think that a success of email marketing is how big your database list is. It's not. It's how good they are from an engagement point of view, how many people are clicking on it, and ultimately how many people are purchasing through it. This next point includes me as well. People don't spend enough time getting people onto their email lists. So really work on your lead magnets. I think that we spend so long in email marketing creating the content emails for the month, creating our flows. But once everything is set up, once you've got everything that I've just said sorted, maybe instead of spending so long on your content marketing emails, why don't you take half of that time and really work on your lead magnets? So your lead magnets are what you do to create people to encourage them to give you their email to get something in return, and then they're on your email list. So you need to give something of value. People are not going to just give you your email address without getting something in return. So it's much easier with product-based businesses because you could be giving them 15 or 20% off their first order to sign up to an email list. And that is probably the most common one. And it's the most common one because it's the most effective. Some other ones might be sign up and get free shipping. But if you are a service-based business, you have to work slightly harder. So it could be a freebie of any type. It could be a freebie of a download, like a guide or PDF, or it could be a webinar. Genuinely, nobody spends enough time on this. I don't spend enough time on this. But my advice is don't spend time on this until you've got all of your trigger emails and your segments firing. You can't do everything at once. But then don't just think that's it. This is like the next stage that everybody forgets about. Everyone just kind of goes, whoop, now we can just concentrate on content marketing and that's it for marketing. No, having really great lead magnets is going to help, because then once you've got them in, then you've got all of your segments up, you've got all your trigger emails up, and then that ROI is gonna go up and up and up. I would say that this is always a channel that I want to spend more time on, and I don't. It's definitely a more steady channel than any of the others. So like, you can go viral with your email, so it's kind of just strong and steady in the background. data is your best friend with this channel. It's a great channel to experiment with, to have clever emails like abandoned basket, percentages off, back in stock emails is another good one. If somebody always buys the same one thing and it's out of stock, then you can send them when it's re in stock, or on the products that are out of stock, you can add a button to say, email me when this is back in stock again. That can be one of the best converting emails. This also can be one of the best converting channels because your audience are warm. They already know about you. You're not, I know I said about the brand awareness going into the top of their emails, but it's more just like you're front of their mind again. But remember, you've already done the hard work here with the brand awareness to get them onto your email list. You've already done the hard work to get their data. So here is your sign to dive back into email marketing this week. Okay, finishing off very quickly, because we are already off, this podcast is running away with me. Very quickly, let's talk about organic social. Now, this is the most obvious one, and I never usually talk about this for two reasons. It's not that I don't think it's effective. I just don't talk about it because it is one of the most well-known channels. It's the only digital marketing channel that everybody uses in their day-to-day life, well, most people, and as well as their business lives. It's probably why social media managers' personal social media accounts aren't very active. You get social media fatigue and you just can't face it. I hear you. I don't even do organic social in my day-to-day, but when I come to mine, I'm like, because you're around it all day. Can you imagine having to do PPC for fun on the weekends? Like, no, I really feel for social media marketing managers where people are like, oh, well, your social media isn't a big following. It's like, yeah, because they do it day in, day out. So whilst I'm not going to go into the definitions of this platform, I'm going to give you a couple of my top thoughts, advice, and learnings from this channel. Also, I'm speaking really fast. You're not listening to this podcast on 1x. If you already are, I'm so sorry. You're probably on thinking it's 2x. I'm just trying to get through it so that you can hear everything that I'm trying to say. Okay, here are my top nuggets. Yes, Facebook is dead for organic reach, but it can be very powerful for local communities through local Facebook groups. I think this can be a very, very good tactic. And it's easy for local businesses. So how many people that are listening to this are a part of a local Facebook group in your area to know what's going on, local news, current affairs, probably people moaning about all sorts of things that local people moan about. And so this could be a really great tactic for local businesses, getting those Facebook groups, engage, be there for when people need your service. TikTok is the platform for impressions and that algorithm love. It's also generally a better user experience. And so that is why I think that it is one of the best platforms for all audiences, for all age groups. Whilst there is obviously bigger amounts of audiences with Gen Z and millennials, that doesn't necessarily mean that if you're Gen X or if you're boomers, it doesn't necessarily mean this isn't for you. I could scroll on TikTok for hours, but Reels, probably 10 minutes. I just don't like the user experience. It really annoys me. I hate it. Creating TikToks, obviously, it takes a lot of time, effort, and most importantly, creativity, more than you think. If I had TikTok in my team, it would be someone's full-time role just to do it, because that is how, one, I think it is so important, but two, I think that that time that it takes is really underestimated. I don't have it in mind because I'm B2B. Yes, I do think that there is definitely room for some B2B businesses to be on there. But just right now, currently with my audience, I just don't think it's right for, I have better channels that are performing better. But I do think that some B2B businesses could be on there, depending on who your audience is within B2B. Remember, just because you're B2B, you still have within your B2B audience, specific industries, specific people, specific niches. And then that could be one where it could be for you. For example, if you are in hair and your B2B is wholesale hairdressers, there's probably a place for you on TikTok. I say this a lot, but I wanted just to add it in here. TikTok and Pinterest are SEO platforms, so bear that in mind. They are search tools. People are coming there to search for things. And so it's not so 24 hours like it is on some other platforms. X, we don't need to go into. You all know my feelings on this. Don't forget YouTube and YouTube Shorts. I think that sometimes this channel is passed over. It can be very effective, especially YouTube Shorts. You might want to look into, if you're already doing Reels and TikToks, it's another great place to go. If you are a product-based business, you need at most 80% of your content on social not to be about products. People do not go on social just to see products. They go on social to be inspired, entertained, distracted, or to learn something, not just to view products for sales. If you want to view your products, TikTok does a great way of doing this. Why don't you do things like make it more engaging? So Aldi do this really well. They have somebody from go into a store and be like, look what's on the middle aisle this week. And then they literally take you around the store, show you the products like in situ. It is organic. It's user generated content. It is still their products. People are still viewing them, but it's done in an engaging way. Another way of doing this is so good that TikTok uses so well across lots and lots of brands. They will do a try-on. So say H&M has a whole new range. Instead of just like literally what we would have done in the past is just done like a swipe of stories of models wearing the products. Now you have real people trying on the clothes, trying them on, talking about them, showing them off. Like that, if you're a product-based business, that is how to do product-based marketing, not just show pictures of your images. Okay, I'm nearly finished, promise. Merging your social strategy with content creators can 10 times it. They bring a whole new level of authenticity, creativity, engagement. And that can be really hard for an internal brand team to do all of the time. So merge those and it's going to make your life and your ROI and your engagement so much higher. Don't do too many platforms. Don't think you need to be on all of them at once. Go where your audience are and how many you can do to have the level of creativity and connectivity and time that you want on those platforms. And finally, mix it up, try new things. Some things will flop, some things won't, and it's not always the algorithm's fault. It might just be that the content was bad. And then two final things on this: try a scheduling tool that works for you and ensure you are social listening to your brand as well. I know I said it was a final thing, but I wanted to say these two things as well. So social media is something that I have always had organic social media in every single marketing channel that I've ever had. I just don't talk about it a whole bunch because I personally don't like doing it and creating it, but it is really important. There are far more creative people than me out there that do this incredibly. And it is a really important part of your strategy, probably for 99% of businesses, this is something that you can do. But it is sometimes a blummin' hard slog. And sometimes I really, really feel for people in organic social because it is a lot of work, probably more than other platforms in so many ways, because you're continuously having to create new stuff all the time over and over. It's not like platforms where email marketing, you can set things up and then they can be generating you really great sales in the background. It's not like affiliate marketing that other people are doing it for you. A lot of this does rely on the brand, but do remember that the way around this is to have really great content creators that can create you incredible content as well. Okay, sorry, I tried to get through that as quick as possible because I saw the time running away with me here, and this is even part two. I just hope that this gave you a little bit of insight into some more digital marketing channels. Maybe out of the six that I've spoken about, so the three today, social media marketing, affiliate marketing and email marketing, and the three last week, PPC, SEO and programmatic. I hope that you have learned something new about them or inspired to go and try a different way, a different tactic, or just learn something about the current way that you're doing it, or dive into some of that data. The great thing about digital marketing channels is we have that data. We can see what's going well, what's going bad, what we might want to tweak. And if you don't know what the data means, the next step for you is to learn what that data means. As I mentioned, I'm not an expert in these channels. I just have a base level knowledge of them. Then when you want to become a marketing manager, or if you are a marketing manager, knowing the fundamentals of these channels can really help you to create incredible marketing plans, because you know how they work, you know how much time they take people, you know what to do to get the best out of the people that use these channels, but also how to cleverly intertwine them and supercharge them with other channels to get an even better ROI. So there you are. I'm done now, I promise. I hope you have an amazing, amazing week, whatever you are doing. And I am going to be doing next week a request from one of you about checklist for event, which will be fun. I'm excited to do that. I flipping love events, so you don't need to tell me twice to talk about events. So that is coming next week. Until then, have an amazing week. I'm cheering you on, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye for now. Thank you so much for listening to my Marketing Nuggets podcast. I've been your host, Emma, and I will catch you next time. Bye for now.